Hey everybody, this is Bob. How are you doing today? And welcome to a conversation with Eric Sizemore. Eric is, Eric, why don't you tell us what you are exactly?
Well, I'm a bunch of things, but primarily a librarian and comedy adjacent.
Okay. I didn't even know that was such a thing. I suppose you could be adjacent to anything, right? So.
Yeah.
In my case, I'm trailer park adjacent. No, I'm just joking. It just sounded funny. Well, that's cool. So I guess those two things go together, right? So librarian and comedian. So are you a comedian librarian or a librarian comedian? I guess that would be the question.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know. It's a little of both.
Because, you know, you got to pick one, you know, put in front.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting. When I first started doing this, I thought, oh, I'll be the librarian comedian, you know, and like in the library circles, I'd be the comedian librarian. And in the comedy circles, I'd be the librarian comedian. But over time, I kind of found out that, you know, with any job, you know, people talk about their professions. And there's three primary targets, you know, for your jokes. It's either like the customers or your coworkers or management.
Yeah.
But in my case, as a librarian, I can't make fun of any of those people.
I was going to say it becomes precarious at certain times, I would imagine.
Yeah.
You could talk in vagaries, I suppose, but not anything that's... pointed.
Yeah.
So yeah. Oh, interesting. Well, that's interesting. Actually, you can just do a lot of Dewey Decimal humor.
The Dewey Decimal
system, right? Wasn't that called? Yeah. The you Dewey system. Although I heard that there's some backlash on that system currently. So.
Oh, it's hilarious. If you mention Dewey Decimal system among the academic librarians, they just go, Dewey is racist.
Yeah Dewey's racist.
You're like, yeah, actually, yeah, he was. Yeah. Misogynist, sexual harassers.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of people in history who are racists and bigots and all kinds of stuff.
Weird.
That it all happened. There's no denying. Mm-hmm. No denying. Yeah, that's a weird thing about today is we can't just complain about now. We have to complain about the past. So, yeah, I guess we could complain about the past before, but maybe not in the same terms. You're applying the terms of today to the past, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. But anyway, let's get off of that topic.
I get a lot of questions. You know, people are like, oh, comedy, you can't say anything anymore. And I was like, comedy has always been topical and about what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go back and you like, you know, listen to Lenny Bruce or something like that, it's not as funny because you're not in that time. You know, you're not
right.
That time.
Yeah. Everything's not evergreen, right?
Yeah. But the other thing is, too, is like, you know, comedians, we're all about words. It's like poetry. It's like lyrics. It has a certain formula to it. And you have to pick the right words. And it's like, no, it's not that, you know, you can't say anything. You just have to pick the right words, which is the gig. Always has been.
Well, there you go. So comedy is a profession of language.
Yeah. You know, and the vernacular changes all the time. The topics of interest change all the time. The moral boundaries change all the time. So you know, it's right on the edge. It's always interesting.
Yeah, I always love to do this bit on rotary telephones, but it just doesn't go over so well anymore.
I'm stunned. I still make reference to $6 Million Man, and I don't know why. The kids still know that? I have no idea. That'll be fine.
Probably not.
But it still works, and I'm thrilled.
So whenever you set out in your – so obviously if you call yourself a librarian, so this is a career choice, right? This isn't happenstance. Okay. You just didn't wake up one morning and answer the ad in the paper said, need somebody to stack books.
Yeah, I think what it was is that I am a person that has had a lot of jobs and done a lot of gigs. And, you know, I do some acting and some voice acting. So those are always gigs, you know, but I did a lot of stuff. And then I just happened to hear that the University of Illinois here in town is the number one library school in the whole world. And it was just like, library and information science. I was like, interesting. And then I thought about it and I was like, oh, that's actually like, you know, studying everything, which is kind of what interests me.
Well, there you go. Yeah, the U of I. And so I'm from the Midwest as well. And I'm actually from originally from Decatur, Illinois, which isn't too far from where you're at.
I've made plenty of jokes about Decatur.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Why is it so windy in Champaign? Because Decatur sucks. But anyway.
Oh!
Yeah. But so I'm in St. Louis right now. But anyway, I talk a lot about the Midwest and some of these things. And people don't, I think, realize University of Illinois in Champaign is, you know, number one in a lot of areas over the course of time, not only in library science, but in computer science, in, you know, all these, I mean, in, you know, having Native American, you know, what do you want to call it? Native American, you know,
mascots,
yeah, and keeping them against the trend. But a lot of things have happened there. One of my favorites is that HAL 9000, you know, fictionally was born in Champaign.
In Urbana. And like, and the weird thing is, we actually did have a company called HAL, I think it was HAL Computer Corporation. It was so funny. I used to do sales and I walked in and I was like, hey, I want somebody to tell me all about this place. Turns out they make the cop radios.
Okay.
Yeah. I was like, oh, interesting.
Well, whatever. He's involved in that. Officer, there's a speeder. The so have you always been from that Champaign-Urbana area?
Yeah, I was born here. I almost ended up over by Danville in a very small town called Catlin, but then moved back to Champaign and spent a stint out in California, and that really will put the Midwest into perspective. You're like, hey, I'm going to drink some tap water. Check it out. I'm really enjoying this. Look at that sunset with just normal colors and not brown.
Oh, yeah. So what were you doing out in California?
I had an opportunity. I was like this close to enlisting in the Navy. And I got a call. I would have gotten bounced out so badly. You always think you're such an impressive person. And I was like, oh no, that would have been hell. That would not have worked out well. But I got a call from some folks that were building their own home in the San Bernardino National Forest, up a little village called Running Springs. And they were like, hey, you want to come out and help us while we're building this house? And I was like, yeah, I can join the Navy later.
Oh, okay. So they saved you. This house raising saved you from joining the military.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I ask you why in your head you're like, Navy, this is for me?
When I looked at the pay, I had just a little bit of community college, and it was enough to raise my E level. Mm-hmm. And so I would go in as like an E2 or E3 or something instead of an E1. And then it had the fastest advancement. You got pay that was better. And then we had the Montgomery Bill, which in the state of Illinois, if you went into the military, you got your college paid for. So,
oh yeah, just, GI Bill stuff. Yeah,
it was just. I didn't have anything better.
Oh, okay.
I didn't have a better idea.
Well, I know people on both sides of it, and I always think, at least for me, the side of not going is always the better side for that. I'm not real up on people telling me what to do all the time. So
no, I have tons of comedian friends that are veterans, and they're always just like, you know, Eric, you're always late, and if you'd been in the military, you'd be on time. And I was like, you know, you're always anxious, and if you hadn't been in the military, you wouldn't have PTSD.
So. Ouch. I'll take my tardiness over PTSD, thank you.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, yeah, we both got problems.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Interesting.
I don't know if you've noticed that in the comedy scene there are a lot of veterans. There's a lot of veterans.
I hadn't even thought about it, to be honest with you. I would think that that would not be the case, just because a lot of people in the military don't seem very jovial. I mean, you can't even smile in any of your pictures. I mean, that's the first thing you notice. I think they just yell at you nonstop while you get your service picture taken, because there's nobody's ever smiling in a service picture.
Interesting.
Have you ever noticed that? You ever see people their first in kind of service picture, you know, and it's like they basically look like, you know, somebody's stuck them with a pin or something. Mm. Yeah. I'm like, you don't get a smile in the military. I guess not. I mean, I wouldn't go over well, I'm sure. So, so interesting path here. So you've got saved by a house project.
Yeah.
And then you had to get back to the Midwest at some point. How long did you work on that house?
About 6 months. Got it just about fit. Geodesic dome home.
Oh, great.
You can see it from Route 330, and it's awesome because everybody that, you know, goes to Big Bear, I just like, you know that geodesic dome home you see from the road? Yeah, I built that. They all know it. Love it.
You see that? See all those triangles? I put some of those up there, you know? Yeah, Buckminster Fuller, right? Buckminster Fuller. Yep. Another Midwesterner, oddly enough.
Yep.
Bucky Fuller.
Northern Illinois, actually, yeah.
He actually taught at Carbondale, where I went to school.
Did he? Oh, that's right.
There's a big geodesic dome on campus at Car. At least it used to be. Maybe it's not there anymore, but it used to be, yeah. Bucky Fuller.
I love it.
Yeah, it was a fantastic kind of kooky guy with all kinds of crazy ideas that, you know.
I got an autographed copy of Operation Manual for Spaceship Earth by Buckminster Fuller.
Oh, wow.
Somewhere in the collection.
So not only do you catalog, but then you collect.
And there's a couple different flavors of librarians. It's interesting. There's librarians that have 1,000 books in their office, and there's librarians that have none. Because
they're tired of it.
They can just borrow anything they want anytime. So
just like you borrowed that autographed copy. It's fantastic. It's on long-term lend to me, yeah. That's interesting. So do you find, so have you cross-referenced your comedy with your librarianness? Do you find that it helps you? I mean, obviously they're both language professions.
That's interesting.
Kinda, I guess.
I mean, I keep track of my sets and I track laugh per minute on every performance.
Seriously? Wow.
Oh, yeah. I'm very, you know, I got spreadsheets. And, you know, I love showing the noobs just to, like, scare them, basically. Look at all the paperwork you could be doing.
So what would you say is, if you said, what's the laugh per minute ratio that you want to hit? Like, you're going into this, what do you want to get to?
Well, something I noticed, and I mean, you can do this as an experiment. There are certain performers, and you can tune into any special they do, anything, and randomly select 5 minutes and just do a tick for every joke, and you're going to get 35. You're going to get 7 laughs per minute every single time.
Really? 7 laughs per minute? Hmm.
You can do that with Dave Attell. I've never found any segment of Dave Attell that doesn't work with that formula. John Mulaney. Amy Schumer, pretty much any of them.
I watched the Mulaney, LA people thing. I don't think he hit 7 a minute on some of that.
Well, now see, it's a different ratio if you go to a different format. If you take like a Seth Meyers, you know, late night, that's running more of a 3.5 to 4. Those shows are much slower. You know, they're different setups.
Okay.
You know, but no, with, but I like the Machine Gun, Dave Attell, you know, Amy Schumer style. I mean, 7 laughs per minute. That is, and the fact that you can do it anywhere tells me that their writing is very systematic. You know, they're very disciplined. I mean, you can't hit that consistently without, you know, knowing what you're doing.
Wow, that's interesting. I never thought about it that way. That's because if you're in the kind of the media world, right? So if you watch movies, it's basically a cut every 3 seconds.
Okay.
In a regular scene, right? So if you can almost count 1, 2, 3, cut 1, 2, 3, cut. So it's very similar. So there's a rhythm. You're seeing the rhythm in what's happening, even though it may not be totally apparent to the viewer at that time.
But I just originally very much needed a way to objectively tell what was happening, because I had seen people bomb and get off stage, mm-hmm. and I'm like, you know, I'm just halfway teasing them, hey man, how'd you do? And they're like, oh, I killed. And you're like, wow. And I've seen people, I've seen it numerous times where somebody has just absolutely killed and they're off to the side of the stage grumbling and concerned mm-hmm. about the tags they dropped and the thing that didn't work. And, you know, it's like they were witnessing a different thing. And I was like, I need some kind of objective way to be able to tell what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
So you're doing this statistical analysis of comedy.
Well, but the nice thing about comedy is that it has an authenticity. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When you do your bits, the audience makes a noise. It's an objective reality. Because you can go for a groan.
Mm-hmm.
You see, there's lots of people who go for the what I call clapter. You know what I mean?
Clapter. Okay.
You know, hey Chicago, how we feeling?
That's right.
You
know, yeah. You know, the give me, as they say, right?
When you see somebody do like two of those or three, you're like, oh.
Yeah. Well, maybe they only got 4 laughs in this minute, so they're trying to get 3 more.
But that's the other thing too, where I just, you know, I'll let anybody have 1, you know what I mean? But when you start bringing up your just anything, it's just designed to just get a clap. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's designed to, you know, aren't you so brave? You know what I mean? Oh, your son was the first male cheerleader at the high school. Great. Good for you. You know what I mean? Like, we're all going to applaud. That's a wonderful thing. But like, right. You know, you get 1.
That's funny.
They start taking points off.
It's a comedy mulligan right there.
Yeah.
we're writing a book right here, Eric. This is all the statistical comedy. It's a good title for a book. We got all kinds of stuff going on.
Well, I'll tell you the stats that I would really like to understand is I wish the bookers of the comedy world would get together and say things like, you know, I mean, I've talked to a few of them. They're just like, oh, it's impossible to book in August. And I'm like, really? And like, apparently August is dead, you know.
Okay. Or why?
There's certain months and certain times where they just know, oh, this weekend is always a wash and you're never going to get any shows.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of knowledge, I would love to see that, you know, and I don't have that.
Yeah. Interesting. So now you pretty much are local, right? So you're not traveling around too much, or you do travel around?
I mean, very little. I mean, I got friends in Chicago and I'll go up every once in a great while, but you really got to have an in, mm-hmm. because there's 100 mics up there, all with, you know, 20 comedians in the audience and no civilians.
Right. Right.
You know, you got to have the inside. You got to have a bud who is going to be straight with you and tell you this is a show that actually has an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm really talking mics. I mean, I don't know. Around here, yeah, East Central Illinois, we've got a couple vineyards that do shows outdoors sometimes in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of smaller venues, a lot of smaller towns that are starting to have events. Because, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure this is happening in St. Louis just like it's happening everywhere else, but venues are going away.
Right,
I
mean,
I don't know if bars and restaurants just can't make it anymore, if people aren't drinking as much out, if COVID just taught people how to drink at home. I don't know.
Well, I think COVID probably took a big chunk out of, you know, the money away. And people just, yeah, and that and inflation. So between the two.
I would love to read an academic paper, though, on, you know, the number of users on Tinder and the number of people who go to the disco.
Well, there, that may be, you may be onto something there. Maybe you need to come up with an app that is just a rapid fire comedy app. So, you know, kind of a swipe right, kind of funny ha-ha thing, right? So be like one-liner, like a one-liner Tinder.
Hmm.
And if you like it, you swipe right. And if you don't like it, you swipe left. You get somebody else telling you a joke.
Boy, that'd be... I could get stuck on something like that for a
long time. I mean, in a way, that's what TikTok is. I mean, how many... for me, at least, I mean, I don't know what your experience is. And I am actually tired of it. But, you know, I can only watch people fall down so many times on a video, no matter where the hell they are and what country or what situation... I've grown tired of the America's Funniest Home Videos online at this point, but maybe there's room for other things. We'll see. I mean, you know,
I deleted TikTok.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, being kind of a technology aficionado, I always like to see what's happening, even if I don't like it.
Oh yeah. When I first got out of graduate school, my specialty is competitive intelligence, business intelligence. And so I went to work for this company, and basically I was just doing competitive intelligence on the internet. So I was writing up reports on what was happening on the internet for like rich dudes. Mm-hmm. It was great. Oh my God. It was the best job ever.
to me, that just sounds, I'm like, and they're paying you to do this.
Yeah. So I joined like everything. I mean, it was hilarious. You cannot name a social media service from 20 years ago that I wasn't on. I did That's everything. Wild.
So you're a Friendster kind of guy.
Friendster, FriendFeed, MySpace, Orkut.
I don't even know what that one is.
That was Google's attempt. That
oh,
just
okay.
Died.
Yeah. Google has a, you know, there's that they always use that sign yard in Las Vegas with all the old signs. Google's got one of those for all their old products.
Oh. Yeah.
Virtually. Yeah. That's going to be, that'll be an attraction once we get into the immersive worlds that supposedly have been coming for the last 20 years.
Dude, I miss so many old products, old software that you can't get anymore. Like, I can't believe I'm nostalgic for crap like that.
Well, it's interesting that you even, I mean, obviously coming from a repository mindset as a librarian, most people don't care. I mean, they just don't, you know, does anybody remember Odeo?
Is that a radio thing, audio thing?
Yeah, it was like an early podcasting thing. It became Twitter.
Really?
Yeah. Go figure, right? So anyway, trip down memory lane there. But
now, it's interesting you say that because there's a weird crossover with librarians and podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people actually sort of, you know, measure like the major milestone was the first podcast that was added to the Library of Congress.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Maron's WTF.
That was? Oh my gosh, that's not even an early one. These bastards,
right,
I didn't pay attention.
What was hilarious was before that, there was a site called DMoz, which was kind of like a Yahoo directory that was built by people, like a Wikipedia of Yahoo directories, which the kids won't know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And they had mods for different, you know, departments and specialties. And my buddy in library school set up the category for librarian podcasts.
Oh,
and when he finally stopped, he had curated 1,000 librarian podcasts.
Really? There's all talk about books?
Well, see, library and information science encompasses everything.
I can hear the pitch. This is the pitch right now.
No, it's just
Bob.
It's just,
you can't believe the library and information science.
No, I mean,
encompasses a vast array of subject matters and ideas.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You've heard of SEO, you know, search engine optimization. Well, that's library science.
Mm.
That's keywords for easier access and retrieval of information.
Right. That's, there you go. Kind of like this FB4TB.
Yeah.
you want to talk to us about that?
I'd be happy to tell you about that. So I guess over the pandemic, it might have been for my birthday, a friend of mine bought tickets to a Zoom comedy show. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it at the time, but they've all become good friends of mine. It was Drew Harmon, who's up in Detroit now, and Liz Stone, who's in Las Vegas, and Ron V, who's also out in Las Vegas, but used to like book everything in the Bay Area, apparently. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I never saw so many comedians show such deference to a person. It's like, hey. Yeah, Ron was amazing. Ron had been a writer for Joan Rivers, and
speaking of, just an aside on Joan Rivers, I just read she has one of the best cataloged joke banks. Yep. Of anyone, apparently.
Yep, and the librarians help with that.
Yeah, I just read that. They're like it's a plethora of jokes.
What they didn't talk about was that
the cross
even
reference.
Though those were typewritten, they still, it was back when that was originally, like, you know, first donated when she passed away. Mm-hmm. OCR was still a little, you know, iffy, you know, optical character mm-hmm. recognition. So they posted in the librarian and museum, like, you know, message boards, hey, we have this enormous collection of 36,000 jokes on cards.
Right.
But we need some help transcribing it, you know, if anyone. Anyway, apparently the whole project was done in about 8 days because the librarian's
wow.
all. He's just like, are you kidding? I can read a Joan Rivers joke straight from the card and type it in.
So, yeah, cross-referencing.
Yep, that is
and,
all.
And crowdsourcing at that, yeah.
I'm
sorry, I kicked you off the Facebook
stuff
for the blind.
So we went to this great Zoom comedy show. It was called Best of SF. No, it was called Zoom Comedy, I think. Or Live Zoom Comedy Live. I don't remember. Anyway, it had a really great name, and they got the URL, which was amazing.
Really that escapes me.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Went, and it was like, I mean, because we hadn't had any comedy in, you know, 2 months. I mean, whenever COVID locked us all down,
mm-hmm.
3 months, there was nothing. And then all of a sudden we had live comedy, and I'm having a bourbon. I was dying. I'm in the chat, like, talking to my friend, you know, like you whisper to your friend at comedy shows.
Right.
Talk smack about people. I was like, oh, this is the whole experience. This is great. And then, you know, I have a little voice in my head that says, okay, one bourbon, that's it. You got to drive home. And then I was like, wait a minute.
I'm not driving anywhere.
Driving anywhere. Holy cow, I can tie one on. I don't have to be anywhere. It was probably a bad thing, but it was great. Got me through the pandemic.
Oh, wow. So, interesting.
So that inspired me to want to do my own show. Mm-hmm. And it took me probably about 2 months or so to wrangle comedians, and none of them had ever worked in offices or had Zoom or knew what they were doing at all.
Makes it a little tough.
Yeah, but bit by bit, you know, we did it and kept doing it, and now we've got this live on Zoom podcast that takes place every Tuesday night, and it's called Facebook for the Blind. Basically, comedians playing show and tell with memes, and the idea is that, you know, you could be washing the dishes and just wearing headphones and you can still laugh at a meme even though you can't see it because we'll say it.
Oh, know? It's like descriptive audio.
Yeah, because I used to work for a reading service, Illinois Radio Reader, and we read newspapers to the blind.
Mm-hmm.
And they not only do newspapers, but they do the circulars, the ads inside, the coupons. I mean, all kinds of stuff that it doesn't get printed in Braille, doesn't get said out loud, you know. And I was like, well, I wonder how much they're missing on Facebook, you know, because you've heard sighted elders of ours describe something they saw on Facebook to somebody.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's this kitten. Yeah. This kitten, you see? And the kitten, he said, what's
it says,
he say?
Hang on.
Exactly.
Oh, did I mention it was hanging from a tree? I forgot to say that.
I forgot that part. Okay, wait. Let me go back. Let me start again. Yeah. So, after overhearing things like that a million times, I was like, well, I wonder if comedians could do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because a meme is not just straightforward. It's not just reading text. You actually have to figure out how to set up the tension, set up the premise, and then launch the punchline. You know, it takes timing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to see if it was possible. And we're 4 years into it and 160 episodes this Tuesday. And I don't know.
Sometime. Interesting. So is it all on the fly, or do you prep, or what's your, does everybody bring their own memes and they prep them?
Yeah, we have anywhere from we've had as many as 8 people on the show, which is way too many people. but usually it's 3 or 4 comedians, and we each do a round of about, you know, 8 or 9 memes in a row. Mm-hmm. And then we switch off. It took a lot of iterations to get to that, but say if like you and I were doing this and we're trying to do one meme at a time, mm-hmm. the transition between getting set up and sharing your screen and then the next guy share, there's too much downtime, you know what I mean? So we had to clump them together. But no, it's really fun. And I used to be a DJ, so I like open the Zoom room like an hour early and play all my favorite music and put on cat pictures and memes and laser shows. My dream over COVID was always to do this as a live show, mm-hmm. To have like a stage audience and then have like a screen that has the, you know, the Zoom gallery audience and then mm-hmm. the, you know, what we're showing, you know, and then me sitting there, you know, in front of everybody. I finally got it together and we are going to be doing that for the first time in a studio on Thursday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
We have some really excellent video producers, VJs, really, like mm-hmm. like straight off what I thought the future was going to be. I'm a video jockey, you know.
Right, exactly, yeah.
These guys do, they'll just have like 15 projectors going, covering every wall and surface. And mm-hmm. We have a big arts festival here in town called the Boneyard Festival. And a lot of the guys that are in this collective had done this whole art installation where it was like, I don't even know how to say it, like sheer walls, kind of like sheer gauze. Mm-hmm. And the projections were like going down the gauze, and it was like a maze and a hall of mirrors and weird lights all over the place, just all shifting and moving like psychedelic hippie, you know, loving.
Yeah, I went to a Van Gogh thing, which was immersive Van Gogh, where they do all that stuff.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is. It's very neat. And just another aside, Alan Hunter lives in St. Louis, by the way, one of the original VJs.
Oh, from MTV?
Yeah, from MTV.
Oh, wow. Nice.
He does a show out of his house in St. Louis. Anyway.
Yeah, from the second it came on, my young self was enthralled.
Yeah,
I was
like, well, exactly.
This is the job.
You know? I hate to burst your bubble, but Martha Quinn is 65.
No, I saw that. I don't care. My crush is unabated. my crush is unabated. I don't care.
She's still, you know, she's still a very nice looking young lady.
I loved 65. I loved her for her insides.
Oh yeah, of course. I believe now she's a librarian. But anyway, that sounds great. So you're moving forward. You're going to have a more kind of produced type version of what you've been doing. You said you're going to the studio. So, I mean, is this, so you're, is it going to all originate where you're at? And then all your other folks from across the country are going to still Zoom in, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I have had other comics in Champaign, Urbana who've been on the show. But one by one, they've all had to go off and do other things. So Yeah, I'll be the only one representing from here, but I'll have a live audience, and we'll have a Zoom audience, and we'll have a Twitch audience. Mm-hmm. So, hopefully all the audiences will be able to see each other and wave at each other and give each other the finger like that portal in Ireland and New York.
Yeah. Are they going to moon each other? Is this going to be a big moon fest here?
You know, whatever gets the Twitch, whatever gets the audience, if it moves the merch, Bob, what do I care? You know?
That's terrible. That's a horrible thing to say. You're supposed to be in it for the art. Come on, Eric.
I'm in it to sell the art.
Oh, to sell the art. Okay. I thought you meant to create the art, the illusion.
I'm an American and I want.
Yeah, okay.
I want to be able to pay my rent and then afterwards, like, buy other things.
Yeah. I want to buy other things. okay. So, I guess that you just ushered me into another question. So is it paying the rent?
No.
Okay. No. But you're having fun, right? So this is something that you want to do. You're not now being forced into it in some kind of a strange.
No. And I'll tell you the best lesson that I learned out of this, and this is what I'd love to share with anybody who happens to listen to this, is I'm practicing with comedians. and you work with comedians and you work with technology. Mm-hmm. Those two things don't mix together well. That's not an instant. That's not peanut butter and chocolate. This is, you know, these are two things that were not probably meant to go together.
You don't think so? Interesting.
No, no, because, you know, no. Anyway, these the people that were the best at finding great memes that shared online were not good at Zoom. Or, you know, if they were good at Zoom, they did not find good memes. Or if they found memes, they couldn't figure out how to share them. You know what I mean? So it was a whole lot of, oh, hang on, wait a second, hang on, wait a just, and it's all timing. It killed it. We had tons of dead air. It was ridiculous. So we just kept doing rehearsals. I kept getting everybody together because I was just waiting till we could get to, can we actually do a half hour? I was just shooting for a half hour of content that flowed smoothly, you know? And the guys were like, when are we going live? When are we going live? When are we going live? And, you know, I have to do all that stuff. You know, they just show up with 10 memes in their phone that maybe they prepared. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe it's just, oh, let me see what I did today. You know what I mean? Who knows? So my man, Michael Abune, who's my co-host on the show and has always been alongside. I mean, he and I have probably done equal numbers of episodes. Mm-hmm. I think out of 160, we've each done like 159.
Okay.
So, he has a mohawk and, you know, and is a punk rocker.
Okay. I was going to say he's got a mohawk and he manages a bank. Oh, interesting.
He has a surprising story, but at the time, you know, I mean, his identification there is, you know, punk rock. And I was like, guy, we need to practice it more. It doesn't look produced enough. It's not professional enough. I don't want to go live with garbage. You know what I mean? It's going to be embarrassing. I want to do it right. And he goes, man, I'm punk rock. Kick it out the door.
Right.
And like, bro, something broke. It was like a weight fell off my shoulders. And I realized that, yeah, what the hell do I care? I mean, I've seen punk rockers do shows. They can't play guitar.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
They're singing a song. They can't sing. They have a crap
attitude.
Microphone.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to do it. They're going to do it. And they're going to do the show and they're going to get it out there. Anyway, it was the most amazing thing. And this is my advice for the world is, I just kept doing it and it's garbage. You know what I mean? And I don't care what it is, you know, but when we're done before the next show, I would kick out the fully produced podcast, you know, in whatever state it was in and just get it out the door and start on another one. And every week try to get a little better, but not getting hung up in all the flubs and problems and everything else. It was just, it is what it is. And, you know, we're punk rock, get it out the door. And I wish to God I had picked something like that as a hobby a long time ago. I think everybody should do something that doesn't matter, that you don't care, and you do it and kick it out the door. I mean, how many people, they don't paint because they can't paint good?
Right.
Or they don't sing because they don't sing good. Or they
didn't
don't
stop
dance.
Jackson Pollock.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I don't know. I can tell you the first ones were probably not good.
Yeah.
I'm certain they were not good.
But that's what you got to do. You just have to keep try. And, you know, I think everybody gets hung up on, you know, unfortunately, and this is you already mentioned this, but everybody gets hung up on the statistics of things. And it doesn't matter if there's any statistics as long as you're having fun doing it. That's the statistic right. That counts.
Yeah.
Is the fun factor more so than anything else.
Over COVID, man. I mean, the thing is that I don't really go out much. The only thing I go out for is comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So the only people I see are other comedians and, you know, comedy fans. And then when COVID hit and everything shut down, I lost everything. You know, I lost all my entertainment, all my social life, and all my friends kind of in the same, you know, fellow group. And then I'm trying to round people up for a Zoom party. I couldn't even get them together for like a dinner party. Do you know what I mean? Like in real life, you know?
Right.
But it was kind of interesting though, because you know, you do comedy, you invite people out, you invite people to shows, and you hear every excuse in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And doing Zoom comedy, I'm telling comedians, show up with memes, you know, those things that you have on your phone right now anyway, on that device that you're using that's in your hand, just press a button on that and join me. And people couldn't manage to do that. And I was like, oh, well, okay. So people say a whole bunch of things, but.
Oh, my goodness.
But I mean, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, people say, oh, I'll try to make it. And I just smile and nod, but I'm like, no, you won't.
I can tell by the tone of your voice, this is not going to happen.
That's just, it's just a numbers game. You tell 400 people about a show and you'll get two. You'll get two people.
Yeah. So, well, you feel fortunate for those two people.
I'm very grateful for those two. I shake hands with them. I hug them. I learn their names. I ask about their mom.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you've already thrown me out the door. I'm never going to show up asking about my mother. Now, so what's next for Air? I mean, you just told us what's next literally Thursday, but I mean, what's next as you look down the road? I mean, my gosh, you have counted like maybe seven different jobs. How long have you been the librarian? Is that your longest employment situation?
Boy, that's a good question. I was a DJ for 17 years, so.
Oh, that's a long time.
I've been a librarian for...
Were you DJ in Champaign?
Yeah. Yep.
What station?
105.9 WGKC, Champaign Urbana's classic rock.
Oh, wow.
Coming back with Jethro Tull.
Cool.
It was alternative rock for the first few years, and it was perfect. It was the early 90s. It was all the best alternative rock and grunge there was, and I was so thrilled to be getting paid to play. It was like 6 a.m. and I'm like dancing in the booth to 311 at full blast. I'm like, this is awesome.
Wow. That's cool. And so you decided, though, at some point you said, I'm not going to do this anymore. Or did the station just fold out from under you and change formats or something?
Yeah. We all got fired one day.
Well, that's radio.
Yeah, I know. It was the funniest thing. People are like, you've been in radio for 17 years? And I go, yeah, I've worked at four companies in the same building.
Yeah, they all just get bought out. And exactly.
And it was like, and they're like, oh, what happened at the end? I go, I don't know. I think management found out I worked there. I don't know.
Like, 17 years. We're going to owe him something. Get rid of him before 20.
No, it was nuts. Literally, the new owner came in and, as I understood it, grabbed the payroll sheet. Mm-hmm. And took a red marker and just drew the line between full-time and part-time. Mm-hmm. And everybody part-time was fired, including all the commission salespeople. And I was like, okay, so this guy doesn't have any idea how to do anything. Like, you know what a commission salesperson is, right? Right.
Somebody that works for free unless they sell something.
Unless they make you money.
Right.
I was like, okay.
You may work all week and not make anything. It's like the best employee you could have.
It's absolutely stunning to me that, like, and I've seen it happen time and time again. You know, it's always like, oh, these guys with the MBAs, they're geniuses. And I'm like, no, not really. They can tell on a spreadsheet this number's bigger than that number, and they're like, we should draw a line here. That's about it. That's
interesting.
Not a lot of, I don't see a lot of innovation. I see the same thing over and over again.
So that's when you made the transition to librarian. So you went to library school after the radio thing?
I was doing them both at the same time.
Oh, actually. Okay. Gotcha. You'd already decided I need to do something different.
Yeah. 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 Well, there was no money in radio when I started, and it seemed to be getting worse.
So. Yeah. Now they just let everybody do it at home, and they don't pay anybody. So there you go.
Are you freaking... Well, that makes... I mean, we were voice tracking back then. You know, I was always stunned at that because, I mean, people didn't know. You know, I'd knock out a whole weekend in, like, you know, an hour.
Right, yeah. And that was, and here is, on to the next thing. Yeah. Yeah. Script it all out, right? And then pop it into the Playmaster 5000.
Not to say that that's easy, though.
But, you know.
I mean, my God, more times than not, a sales rep coming in and telling me, you got to do this spot. And he's got a cocktail napkin with scribbles on it. I'm like, you want me to spin this into gold? What am I getting paid for this? Part of your job. Just do it. I'm like,
okay. Part of your job. You want to be commissioned sales? Anyway.
Yeah.
That's funny. So what would you say your favorite job has been so far? And man, you can even include ones you don't get paid for. So go the width and breadth of everything.
Well, I mean, the one that I always go to in the interviews is I was like, man, I was an Italian. I was a restaurant. I was a waiter in an Italian restaurant. Mm-hmm. And we got all the garlic bread we could eat. And let me tell you what, brother. I really like garlic bread. That was really good.
That's the best job. Free bread. Well,
it's pretty, I mean, you know, nice. Surrounded by good food all the time. That was fantastic.
Wow. Was that younger days or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Can you name the restaurant or you don't want to name it?
Oh, it doesn't exist anymore. So, yeah, Dom's Italian Patio. But,
oh, okay.
I was a waiter in a bunch of places. I waited at a lot of tables. Like I said, I've had a lot of gigs. So, I mean, people always think it's a lot, but I mean, I started when I was like a kid,
right?
And would do three and four jobs at a time. So, mm-hmm. you know, I mowed lawns, I babysat, I, you know, cleaned houses, I, you know, whatever.
You didn't detassel corn, did you? Did you detassel
corn, walk beans, de-geeked corn.
My God.
That's a horrendous job. Worked in factories. Did construction work for a while.
Oh my gosh. So were you kicked out when you were five or what?
No, I got a paper out when I was like eight or nine. I just always wanted to, I just like having a job, making money, you know, just always wanted it, you know, and it never seemed like I could get enough. I think I was surrounded by a lot of rich kids. It's like, oh, if I'm going to ever have a car, I'm going to buy a car.
Nobody's buying me a car. How does that work? Yeah, so was there something like, so when I went to work, I did Tassel Corn. Yep. And I went to the Tassel Corn because I wanted to buy a computer.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was the reason I wanted to detassel. And so was there something that was a catalyst to launch? And this was when I was 11, right? And I was supposed to be 12, but I was very tall, so it didn't matter. Because, you know, they don't actually have IDs when you're 11, at least back in the day. Yeah. And so, yeah, I just wrote I was 12, and they said, okay, get on the bus, kid. But was there something that was a catalyst for you to start earning or just money in general? Or?
Well, that detasseling job was actually when I got back from California. So I was 20, and my crew were all 11.
Oh, my God, you were the leader. Holy moly.
No, I was not.
You were not the leader even. Oh.
I was just another big dumb kid.
Because normally in the tasseling, all the college kids are wrangling everybody, right? The college age kids yelling at all the young kids to get in there and, you know, get basically cut up because that was the whole big thing then.
I'm surprised of how much of this memory I have not repressed, Bob.
Sorry to you know, bring it up again here. Sorry to make you churn this up.
I still think about it sometimes, though, man. When people talk about those nightmares where they're walking in molasses, I'm like, I've actually done that. 20 pounds of mud on each foot.
That's a purely Midwestern area, the tasseling corn, which is just a horrible, horrible job. That if you know, if anybody really paid attention, they would not let children do that job.
No,
because you get cut. I got poked in the eye. I don't know how many times with the corn stalks and corn leaves and everything else.
Did you ever do it where you're riding on the tractor?
No, everything I did was walking.
We did them both, and man, that was like, at the end of the day, after you've ridden on the front of a tractor and you're just looking at infinite rows of corn, you're just grabbing them off both sides as fast as you can, you know, just insanity. When I got done at the end of that day and I closed my eyes, that was all I could see. I could just see infinite corn. And I remember like laying on a couch with my eyes closed and going, I cannot have work intruding into my eyeballs after work.
Yeah, it's a terrible way to make a few bucks.
It paid insanely well. I took it for about 2 weeks, quit, got a check, and I was happy to get the check. And then like a week later, I got an equal check. I thought I'd been fully paid, and I'd only been half paid, and I was happy with it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm so glad I didn't know how much money I was making, or I might have stuck around.
I would have tortured myself a little longer.
Now, then I got out of that, and I was a tree climber. I saw a job for a tree climber.
What?
I love climbing trees.
What are you doing climbing trees? What do you have to do when you get up to climb them?
Once you get up the tree, okay, uh-huh, and you're hanging on with 2 feet, you know, like on a limb, then with your free hands, you start the chainsaw.
Oh, you're trimming trees. Oh, God.
Bro, that is like, oh, my God. That was another, like, you know, real eye-opener to, like, you know, how much is working worth? You know?
Right, yeah. I could just chop my leg off. And yeah, I'd still be up this tree for at least a few seconds.
There was a time, it was those kind of really baggy jeans. I think they might have even tapered at the ankle, but they were really baggy at the top. And I had a pair that had a perforated line right down the inseam. And people were like, oh, what's that? And I go, that's from a chainsaw.
Oh, my God.
It was always, it was the most baller move I could do. You know, like, check that out. Look at that. I almost chopped my own leg off with a chainsaw.
Yeah, it was my McCullough home vasectomy kit.
Oh. Yeah, but that was like, I mean, it was kind of a fun job. It was an interesting job, but at the same time, it was like scary, and the owner was crazy. And, you know, it's after a while. And then he didn't pay me.
Well, there you go.
So I showed up the next week on payday, and I handed out OSHA forms to all his employees. And I said, I'm going to show up every week with a different government form until you pay me in full, Bob. His name was Bob, too.
Yeah, Bobs are like that. They don't like to pay people. It only gets worse if they call themselves Robert.
I'm wrong. I screwed up. His name was Harold.
Oh,
Harold.
Well, there you, it doesn't matter. Bob Harold. It's all the same.
I apologize, Bob. I mean, merged the good name of Robert.
Yeah, that's all right. So what's going forward, right? What's next for you? You got Facebook for the Blind. You're doing this thing coming up. But do you have like a project yourself into the future and you're like, you know, I want to, you know, captain a fishing vessel or something like that?
That is really an excellent question. Matt, you caught me right at a crossroads where I got a roommate because I'm killing it. And he's decided not to renew. So I got to find another roommate. And
is this a pitch for the roommate?
Oh, yeah. If you live in Champaign and you're a ninja. I'm never going to get one quite as good as this guy. He works 7 days a week. He gets up at like 6. He's out the door at 7. I don't see him till midnight. He sleeps here and he's gone. He's a freaking ninja. And I'm like, ah, perfect roommate. Yeah. So anybody, if you want to do that, please move on. I'm looking for a chemistry grad student, 70 hours a week in the lab. Just needs a bed. Just needs a place to keep his mattress on the floor. That guy.
A place to crash. The Wi-Fi password.
So I'm not really sure if I'm going to be able to keep living here where I've lived for about 5 years.
Oh.
And, you know, my job, although it is a great job, and I love being a librarian, it is not enough. So I've got to add something else onto it. I am trying to layer on some merch and some revenue models onto FP for TB and some of the other things. I do a lot of things. I don't know, Bob. This is my sculpture. I sell these.
Is that okay? It looks like a Rorschach kind of thing.
Dude, that's its name! Bob, you're the first person to ever say that! I love you so much!
I'm highly educated, Eric. Sorry.
Bro, yes! its official title is Rorschach Series 2. And
series two. I would be interested. Are there any autographed series one out there in the market?
The very first ones I made were they're 2 foot by 2 foot, so they're really big.
Uh-huh.
And the very very first one was made of copper, and so it looks like that except twice as big and in copper. And then there's another one. The first one I did
is
aluminum.
Is it like thin, like pressed, like copper, like the tin? Like you do with 10 shears and so forth?
No, it's a quarter inch aluminum plate.
Uh-huh.
And it's been cut with what I call a water jet, like
Razor. I'm familiar. Yeah, don't put your finger in that.
And then, yeah, dude, every time I ever get them, I get them back from the machine shop, they're covered in blood. Every time I've ever run them. And I have bled on several of them myself, too. And I'm like, it's so fun to do artwork that is inherently dangerous.
Those water jets are bastards. They don't have any give.
Well, no, it's the edges.
Oh, the edge. Oh, because they're so sharp. Gotcha. A water jet just take your finger off.
And that sits in a frame. It's got a nice black furry background. It's about an inch.
Oh,
interesting.
Oh, okay. So it's like kind of a 3D, yeah. It's what do you want to call it? I can't see in the video very well, but
yeah,
it's essentially inverted, right? So the black part is the cutout part, and the other part is the actual metal. Then,
yeah.
So
yeah.
So well, do you sell them on Etsy or something or?
I've had them up on Etsy for years and no one's ever inquired.
Really?
Thing is I got a friend at a coffee shop who owns a coffee shop here in town, hung one up there. He's got a lot of artwork up there and he moved 3 of them, during pandemic under lockdown. I still don't understand how that worked.
Well, people saw it and they're like, hey, that looks kind of wild. Interesting. Yeah. I love that. To me, you know, it looks, it does look like an ink blot test, which is Rorschach, but
that's what I named him after. And bro, no one's ever said that. You're the first. I've been making these things for like a dozen years.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, everybody needs to read a book.
That's right. That makes me so happy, Bob.
But it has a certain, you know, je ne sais quoi. It's very interesting to me. And to me, when I look at it, just so we can jump into the full experience of it, is it the one that I have? You have it right there. It looks like a kind of like a deranged cat trying to attack something. So on the left side is the mouth and nose with the legs dangling below, but the back end is kind of in the distance.
Yeah.
But like I'm biased toward cats, so
yeah, I can see it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. you need to. Do you know who Noel Fielding is? Do you know who Noel Fielding is? He's a British comedian.
Okay.
Right. You can write this name down. Well, actually, the stuff he's done lately, you'd be like, "What? Why in the hell is this guy telling me this?" He made a show called The Mighty Boosh back in the 90s with his partner, which I'm blanking on his name, of course. But anyway, he is a very artistic comedian, okay? And a lot of what his comedy is very visual, right? And so this reminds me of him because he did a lot of things that were visually interesting in reference to his comedy after he did some other things that kind of made him famous at the time, famous for England. But anyway, you might enjoy some of his. He did a thing called Luxury Comedy. You'll find it on YouTube, which is just outlandish stuff. But anyway.
Okay, fun.
I'm just giving you a rabbit hole to jump in. But for me, The Mighty Boosh is one of the great weird British comedies. So if you get a chance to watch that, it's out on Netflix or something. And there's 3 seasons.
It's my favorite
British
comedy.
You what?
All I can think of with my favorite British comedy that I can think of off the top of my head is Black Books.
Black Books is great. Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah.
That was my favorite. You know, the British do funny alcoholics better than anybody. I think of even like in America,
mostly
Dudley
sad
Moore,
alcoholics. Yeah.
Dudley Moore and Arthur was our last funny alcoholic.
Well, yeah. Now we can't do that. I mean, that's not in vogue right now, is it?
No.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered too. You know, there's TV stations out there somewhere that are like filtering out the Otis the Drunk episodes of Andy Griffith.
Yes. Yeah.
Foster Brooks will never run on television ever.
Right. Yeah. Poor Foster won't be on any of the Dean Martin roasts or anything anymore. Yep. Now they do. Now it's just, you know, I loved the Dean Martin roast reruns and stuff as a child. And there weren't, I mean, I like the roast now, don't get me wrong, as an adult, but it's totally different. You say roast, it's a totally different, you know, kind of aesthetic, yeah, and everything than it used to be when, you know, kind of the Rat Packers were involved, yeah, in it. It's not the same. It's somewhat mean-spirited now, overall.
You know, it's really funny. I was talking to Judah Friedlander the other night, and we were talking about the...
Which
the
hat was he wearing, first of all?
I think it was the one with the Morse code.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
I don't know. That's what I'm picturing, but I don't remember.
You're an asshole. That's what it said in Morse code.
I mentioned on the show, you know, how much I had enjoyed the roast of Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it was because I had a friend of mine who hosted, and she invited over some of my most obnoxious alcoholic friends, but they're also big NFL fans. Mm-hmm. So I got lots of loud, descriptive reasons behind all of the jokes. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Oh, that joke about the massage was because he got caught with a prostitute. And it was a whole, you know, I mean, the whole story, you know, was great. And I really enjoyed it. It was a weird experience because I don't know football. I don't know NFL. I didn't know any of this stuff. So, so it was neat to have interpreters, and it was unique for me, and I enjoyed it. And Nikki Glaser was funny.
Yeah.
And Tony Hinchliffe was funny.
Yeah.
And Tom Segura and Bert Kreischer looked awkward, which was funny. It was funny
to me. Funny. Yeah.
But it was really interesting. It was like, Judah was like, yeah, he goes, but you know, so much of it was just, you know, racist and homophobic. And as soon as he said it, I realized that there were long stretches where we were not laughing.
Right.
And we were even looking at each other. I remember looking at my friend Bethy and going, what was that joke? Am I on the back of the school bus in seventh grade? I mean, that was, I was like, basically it was like all of his teammates going, I think Tom Brady's gay. You know, I was like, I think he's some kind of a queer, you know, I was like, wow. It was the same joke over and over again.
Maybe that's, it hits the crowd. It's very popular. I mean,
well, see, I love it. You're going demand side. I'm going supply side here.
Yeah.
In this analysis, because Judah pointed out, he goes, well, here's one of the issues is you've got all these millionaire, you know, football players and owners reading jokes that they paid comedians to write.
Yeah.
And they're reading them off a teleprompter. And he goes, at that point, what's a comedian?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized he's saying, you're debasing the currency of comedy.
Right.
With that, you know what I mean? And it was mean-spirited, and it was really decades out of date, out of touch, homophobic, and, you know, humor, and misogyny, and all the stuff that we just don't do anymore, and that you're just like, and then Judah was just like, yeah, well, you know, it's fine if you enjoy it, but, you know, I just don't like the vibe. And the thing is, fucker, the next day, when I was thinking back at it, I didn't enjoy it anymore. Damn it. I haven't had a chance to tell him either. Judah, thanks for ruining roast for me.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, no kidding. So, have you got some upcoming gigs you want to say anything about? I mean, at this point,
I got to be honest with you. We went through tech rehearsal the other night to get this show up and streaming for Tuesday, mm-hmm. and it took like 6 hours, and we did not get it done. We managed to get the video projections on the walls correctly, and the mm-hmm. lighting, and some of the mics, and it was just, there's all this streaming technology and network stuff, and no, I gotta be honest with you, I cannot see any further than the end of the show on Tuesday when I will collapse into a couch.
Yeah, now you're gonna have you know, little blinking router lights or something in your eyes instead of cornfield tassels. That'll be your new nightmare.
It is interesting. You know, it's interesting. There are lots of lights shining on me because I tell you, there's like 11 different video projectors all over the place. He's like mm-hmm. short throw video projectors. And then he's also got, you know, LED lighting to light, you know, the stage mm-hmm. area. And he goes, is that too bright? And I looked out and I was like, you know, this isn't even the worst that I've been through. You know, those ones where you're like, you're in a very small place and you've got 8 lights on you and you can't see anything. Like, you know, you're going from side to side to stop squinting.
Just where your transition lenses are transitioned. Yeah. On your glasses there. Yeah. Interesting.
I hate that when you can't see anybody at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because you want to interact and you can hear it necessarily, but it's nice to see it, because sometimes people don't make a noise and you can see their reaction.
Yep.
And you know, or I don't know, you know, if you've ever had an encounter where people are laughing so hard they're not laughing anymore.
Oh,
so then like they're just wiggling.
Yeah.
And you've surpassed the audible laughing stage into the kind of just uncontrollable wiggling. It's almost like they're, you know, going into hyperthermia.
That is awesome you said that, because I finally have a friend that actually has a decent iPhone who goes to enough comedy that I can say, would you mind shooting this, you know, performance, you know, so I can see it. Because normally I just do audio on my phone, but that's, it only captures the laughter that you can hear on stage, you know, because that's where my phone is. And yeah, it's been an added dimension now that I've got a video, you know, from further back. I can see people in the audience physically reacting that I can't hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, okay, that worked. Okay, that did work. You know, like, because I can't tell.
Yeah, exactly. I forgot to ask you, what was the count on the Tom Brady roast? It wasn't 7 a minute.
You know, I did not. I literally meant to go back and do Nikki Glaser and do Tony Hinchcliffe, because Tony Hinchcliffe was a machine gun. It was so many punchlines. I do want to find out. I will run the laugh per minute on that. If I run those numbers, I'll let you know.
Okay, yeah. Post them up. So then
I can almost guarantee you they'll be higher than 7. Tony's number was higher than 7. It was really a performance. That was really something to witness. It was great to see it live.
Cool. Well, Eric, I think we're towards the end here. Anything else you want to mention, or you want to sell some more Rorschach 2.0s?
Yeah.
Or you should do a shopping channel, you know? This one. What do you think this is? Please type in the chat. What do you think this is? You're right. And you know what? That gets you a $5 discount.
Oh, I'd love that. No, please just go to FB for TB. Please, you know, like and subscribe on YouTube and Spotify and all that. I mean, even if you never listen to it, honestly, those numbers really, they mean a lot. they help out.
Just click the button. Don't worry about it. Just click the button.
And then when you see our merch, you know, send me all your money.
There you go.
No, FB for TB, Facebook for the blind. Also, another handy mnemonic that a friend of mine taught me for FB for TB is fuck boys for tuberculosis. So,
holy moly.
Whatever sticks in your mind's craw, please Google it and find us.
It sounds like a third world kind of thing there when you say it that way.
No, but honestly, the show is great. And the more people in Zoom, the merrier. It is the most fun that I'm having for free.
There you go. You heard it here first, folks. Thanks, everybody. And thank you, Eric, for taking the time. And we'll see you all next time.